That is the sound of an American kestrel. It's the smallest falcon in North America. Perhaps you've seen them before without even realizing it. They are these strikingly gorgeous birds. Males are a bright rusty color on their backs and slate blue wings, and then they have these two thick black marks on each side of their face, contrasted with a bright white cheek. The females are similar, although as with many other birds, much more drab so as to remain better camouflaged while in the nest. They're fierce hunters, but packed into the body about the size of a dove. My name is John Benson with CKUW 95.9 FM, and today I want to introduce you to one local couple who is definitely familiar with the species. They're Kim Bisson and Rick Onsky. Kim and Rick are not professional ornithologists or academics, but they've turned their property on the outskirts of Winnipeg into a haven for kestrels that draws them back year after year. The impeccable notes, observations, and unique video footage they've been taking over the years is helping to provide a clearer picture for this species whose numbers have been on the decline. Kim and Rick run a small not-for-profit called New Sun Cinema, and they were kind enough to invite me over to their property back in April to see their setup, observe the kestrels, and chat about the work they've been doing. Their work has garnered the attention of a few larger organizations studying kestrels, and they've also gained a worldwide audience through the webcams that they've set up, including Lori from Bettendorf, Iowa, who officially dubbed the resident pair Lady Winnipeg and Mr. Manitoba. This is part one in a series where together we'll follow the kestrels and witness everything these prairie raptors will have to do in the hopes of achieving a successful breeding season. Let's begin. How did this this kestrel project begin for you folks?
Well, it actually didn't begin. We knew they were in the area, didn't know too much about them, used to see them here and there. And then we have a small pond here in our backyard, so we attract all kinds of ducks. And we attracted, they're here probably every year, wood ducks, which are cavity nesters box. So the initial thing was I built a box for the wood ducks. The kestrels moved in. So, you know, we became curious, so forth and so on, about what is this raptor? You know, what's this raptor all about? And so we put in at first just cheap little camera just to watch what was going on. The first couple of years we documented everything, but just what we saw. And then we put in a small camera, but it was just a cheap little camera. And we had a live stream, but it was pretty bad. You know, in my standards today, I've got very high standards for even when I shoot video of wildlife. And so we ended up installing some HD cameras. And, you know, we had just a top one at first, and we couldn't believe, like, what we were seeing. And then 2 years ago or 3 years ago, we installed now a side camera. So, again, we saw things that we thought were happening from looking from top, but really weren't, because now we had another view. And this year, 2022, we have installed now a third camera outside. So, you know, once our live stream starts, people are going to be able to watch three different views of what's going on outside that box and inside the box.
Now, you have research partners in your studies with the Kestrel project here in your yard. Can you talk a little bit about those?
Sure. We belong to the American Kestrel Partnership, and it's across North America. And as citizen scientists, we partner with them to document all of our observations from our nest box. There are a lot of nest boxes in the country, but the United States, there are thousands of nest boxes. Mm-hmm. So, every year we've been contributing data to them. And then several years ago, Rick also got involved with the Boise, Iowa University, and they did some DNA tests. So we had one of the nestlings, and were able to take some feather samples and sent them down to the United States for DNA sampling. So the reason that the American Kestrel Partnership is such an important organization is that the American Kestrel Falcons are noticed to be on the decline. And so this organization wants to find out what might be contributing to their decline. So the more people that will put up nest boxes and monitor them, the more information it'll give the scientists and researchers.
Now, in the years that you've been contributing data to the these projects, have you received anything back from those organizations? Not necessarily like individually on the stuff that you're reporting, but on like a sort of a broader scale of the research that they're doing?
Yeah, we've received all their papers, I guess, with all the research from everybody throughout the whole country, and kind of the statistics of what's going on in what regions and so forth. We've even sent them some video work. We make our own high-def DVDs or Blu-rays, excuse me. And, we've sent them some of that of kind of little snippets of stuff of what went on for years. It's they were so appreciative that they couldn't believe the camera work and whatnot, we receive nothing. We don't want anything. We're a nonprofit organization. Even our filming, it's all about education, not only for kestrels, but for all wildlife, because lots of wildlife out there are very misunderstood. People have wrong notions about them. So we feel our job is to try to, educate them and talk to them about different wildlife and what they're really about, because we spent a lot of time with several different wildlife. And, that's what we're all about. We're not looking for any kind of monies for anything or whatnot. And a couple years ago, we've teamed up with Dr. James Duncan and Patsy Duncan, which are two very highly educated and well-known owl experts. They've traveled all over the world to do seminars. They've written 3 books now. They do our banding and stuff. What we do here, we are not allowed to actually handle the kestrels, but they have all the permits. When we did do the DNA sampling, yes, we had to get permits. It's just the right way to do things. What we do here is fully legal, and any permits that we have when we find dead animals or whatnot, to keep that animal for education, we get a permit if required. We're also, our area here, our research area, as we call it, has been certified by the National Wildlife Federation, and this year, the Canadian Wildlife Federation. And back to the educational part, we are teaching youth about the kestrels and so forth to help them understand wildlife, become veterinarians, scientists, in all of those aspects of in that kind of field.
Yeah. So you talked a little bit about the film work that you folks do here, and I've been to your website over the past couple of years, and I've seen some of the great video. But now that I'm here at your house and at your residence, and seeing your setup, I'm like, my mind is a little bit blown at just how dedicated you two are to this. Can you give the listeners an idea of like what exactly your setup looks like here at this house?
Yeah. We have 2 nest boxes, and basically the second nest box is more for, it gives them a choice. It's only 100 feet away from the main nest box, which means that due to their area that they protect, we will never have 2 families here. Never. It's basically, for them, they make the choice. The male leads the female to the nest box, but she makes the final decision where she's going to have the eggs. And one year, the male used the second nest box as his bachelor pad, so he went to sleep in there for the night because she didn't want him in the nest box with him. So I built these custom nest boxes, and of course we have cameras in them, and we don't want to disturb the kestrels in any way. And when the young, once they get to a certain age, they projectile poop all over the walls, which is typical raptor, but unfortunately it's in a box, so it gets on cameras and that. So we've devised the system that I can slide the cameras out, clean them, put them back in, and they never see us. They hear noises, but they don't see humans. So this helps, you know, with our research, keeping them here and, you know, letting our viewers, which we have viewers all over the world, to watch this live stream once we start it on our website.
Yeah, the non-invasive nest boxes are critical to be able to monitor them and their natural behaviors. So they're not disturbed, their behaviors are exactly as they would be in the wild. Even after the season goes on and we decide to start doing filming outside, we have a blind. And we stay in that blind while we're doing any of the filming of the kestrels. The young nestlings will start to poke their head out of the entrance hole. The parents will start delivering food. And all of their behaviors are all natural because they don't see us. And they get very used to seeing that blind sitting out there close to their boxes. So yeah, that's a real critical thing. Because then the statistical information that we get is as accurate as possible.
So this spring has been, you know, a particularly tough spring. Can you talk about both when the kestrels arrived this year and then how they've handled the rough weather that we've had so far?
Sure. As typical, mid-March to late March is when the kestrels arrive in this region of the country, because they are a migratory bird. And so that's exactly, they were on schedule for their arrival. And then of course we got hit with a lot of cold weather and a lot of snow. So as all birds, you know, they just will try to keep warm as much as possible. And when we saw one of the snowstorms really hammered the nest boxes with a lot of snow, we took an opportunity to go out there and when the kestrels weren't around, and we cleared the snow out. Now, typically the snow will just end up melting, but this was just unprecedented amount of snow this year. And so yeah, they the couple, the pair, have really got a very strong bond this year. Don't know if the weather has anything to do with it, but they are sleeping together pretty much every night. It's only been the odd night that they're not sleeping together. So is it to share body heat? Hard to say. The weather is starting to warm up now to temperatures that they're more used to at this time of the year during courtship. And so I guess we'll find out if they continue to nuzzle in at night in one of the nest boxes.
Okay, so you mentioned earlier that you have folks banding the kestrels that come and stay on your property. Do you know, have you been able to ever hear about these the kestrels that have been banded? Are they, you know, people here are very familiar with Canada geese, and you know they are very site loyal. They will come back to the place they were born, and that's where they'll breed, and they'll mate for life. And are kestrels anything like that at all? Do you have any indication of any of what's happened to the kestrels that have been either bred or raised here on your property?
We've heard nothing yet, but it is on a worldwide website where If a band is reported, found dead or so forth, that, we would know about it, that it came from here. But we have not seen any of our banded youth, which are only a number of 10, because we've only been banding for 2 years. And unfortunately, one didn't make it last year. And he's our ambassador for our seminars. And we have not seen any of our youngsters return here. We could definitely say by habits, because we watch these 24/7, one of us is always here. We never leave together once they arrive. We never are not here. So it's hard to say. I don't think personally they're the same ones. And, I think we've had a couple pairs here that are different. Just to when we watch their habits and stuff, you can tell they have personalities just like people. So when you're watching them as much as we do, you start to learn. You see different habits, different ways they react with each other, postures, and so forth.
So you mentioned that you have 2 nest boxes, but that you know for a fact, based on the territoriality of the species, that you'll never actually have 2 pairs there. Are there incidents where other kestrels have tried to come in, and what do those incidents look like?
Oh yes, most definitely there will be times where other kestrels will come into the territory, because they're also looking for cavities to nest in, and it is quite a display of aggression, mostly by the female. The females will defend their territory. They will make contact, they will hit the ground, they will roll and tumble. So the females are extremely aggressive when it comes to that. Now, every year we do see a few other kestrels come in, whether they be males or females. This season we have again, we've been seeing another female come into the territory. They haven't had to fight that much with this other female. She seems to scurry off quite quickly. But again, it's typically the female that does display the aggression and forces them off.
Now I'm curious what the courtship process is like with the kestrels. Could either of you talk about that?
Yeah, the courtship is quite an interesting display. Courtship goes on for 3 to 4 weeks. When they are here, they're really creating that bond. The male is really trying to display to the female that he's a good provider. So he does the majority of the hunting, and he will bring her food. Their preferred food is voles, and he actually will take the head off the vole and deliver her a headless vole as a gift. And just the other day we witnessed, she was waiting, in her usual perch area, and he arrived with a vole, and it had the head on, and she would not take it. And he had to remove the head, and when the head was removed, he finally convinced her to take it. So it's quite interesting, that type of behavior. So she will hunt as well, but he does the majority of it. And then the other part of courtship is that he's trying to demonstrate to her, not only is he a good provider for her and the chicks, but that he can find a good location for them to nest in. So he will constantly try to draw her to a nest box. And he will go into the nest box, he'll start calling, he'll bow. It's a interesting display of relationship when it comes to that. He'll scurry and start to dig up the nest bowl and try to entice her into the box. When she's close, or whether she comes into the box with him, They have a lot of chatter going on, and then a lot of bowing. They bow to each other. He primarily does the bowing, but she will do a lot of bowing as well. And we've been noticing that a lot this year. And at this stage in the courtship, they haven't yet, or she hasn't yet, chosen her nest box. We're pretty confident we know which one she's going to choose, just from her behaviors, but they can fool us. So you just never know. But yeah, so anyway, once they're in the nest box together, he, as I say, he will then leave the nest box to, you know, continue to go hunt. At this point in time, he's starting to bring food to her in the nest box. So that's a real good indicator of the courtship progressing to that stage.
Oh, I would just wanted to make a comment about when he brings the voles right inside the nest box for her. He just leans in through the hole and she takes it, and I refer to that as skip the dishes vole.
Before humans had skip the dishes, yeah, the female kestrels have had that for a long time. Yeah. So as general naturalists as well, who you folks obviously have an interest much more in just kestrels, it's interesting to me that voles being their main diet. Have you learned anything about the local vole population over the last number of years by hosting these kestrels?
Yeah, I've found already, you know, a couple different varieties of voles. The most common, it seems like, around here, meadow voles, which are pretty dark in color. There's also some redback voles around here, which are lighter color and have kind of a crimson part on the back of their neck or back. And there are, again, field mice, shrews, jumping mice. They have very, very long tails. I've seen the kestrels have one of those one year. It's not very common, but they've taught me about a lot what's going on out here, you know, in our research area, about what kind of you know, different types of prey that they really prefer, which is, like Kim was saying, voles.
Well, today is April 29th, getting to the end of April, and I'm sort of looking at the screens here of the high definition nest cams that you got here in set up in your kitchen, and yeah, the female has not left the nest box the entire morning that I've been here. So, as you're mentioning, it seems like eggs are going to be on the way soon. What does the sort of timeline for a kestrel's breeding season look like here on the property?
This is just our research. We have seen on average about 28 days. We've seen anywhere from 20 days to 40 days after the pair are here, the length of time it takes before we see one egg delivered or one egg laid. So the female will lay an egg every 2 days approximately. What will end up happening is she'll base the size of her clutch on how much food source there is. On average, we've had 5 eggs in a clutch, and so she will lay an egg. They'll do a little bit of incubation, not a whole lot. They will wait until that clutch is complete before they actually take that on as a full-time job and fully incubate. So it'll span over a number of days, and then they will incubate for 30 days around.
Yeah, and just to add to what Kim has said, the reason why a full incubation does not start until the entire clutch is laid is that unbelievable that they lay an egg about every 2 days, and she could make them hatch all the same day, which a lot of other birds, that doesn't happen, eh? So what that prevents is what we call siblicide. you know, one egg doesn't hatch. We've had it happen here. We've seen it. It's part of nature. One egg didn't hatch 1 year till 3, 4, 5 days. Well, the young is so small. And I mean, these guys and girls grow like you wouldn't believe. Mm-hmm. And by that time, the other ones are so big. And the smallest one has a hard time to get food. And we had 1 year and it perished, or the other siblings eat it, which is called siblicide. And that's a normal occurrence. Mum is pretty good on feeding them. She knows who's got what, which is totally amazing. If someone hasn't got anything and is begging, she makes sure that it always does. The male he's a little different. He does come in and feed them the odd time, but it's like, okay, whoever attacks me first gets the food, eh? And then he's out of there. But she does mostly of the feeding. And it's so interesting to watch her and these five little mouths just peeping away. And at first they're blind when they hatch. So she talks to them to let them know where she is and what she's doing. And it's amazing how they're attracted to her calls and stuff. And you can hear her talking to them and them peeping. And like I say, she's very good at trying to make sure everybody gets some.
Great. Well, I think we'll maybe leave it at that for today. I'm looking forward to maybe coming back and doing a visit once the eggs are here and maybe hatched and get an update on how the pair are doing here. But yeah, thanks so much for your time this morning and sharing your wealth of knowledge. And yeah, looking forward to seeing more updates. Maybe just quickly, for people who are listening, who are interested in seeing some of these video nest videos that you have, where can they find you?
Our website is www.newsun.com. That's NU-SUN.com. And if you go to our website on the opening page, you'll see on the bottom, and it's a link to what we call our Kestrel Corner. And that has information from back from 2014 plus every year. You'll see links to the different informations from the kind of cameras we use, how our nest boxes are built, and several different videos of over the years. You know, there's a wealth of information there. There's some very interesting things to watch. And, you know, anybody who's interested, you're more than welcome. Like I said, I don't know if I mentioned earlier, but we're a nonprofit organization. So we do this all for the love of doing it and also to educate people.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Rick and Kim, for having me over this morning. And yeah, I'll look forward to more updates as the season goes on. So, as a quick little epilogue to part one, after recording this interview, I continued to chat with Kim and Rick in their kitchen, and no less than 10 minutes later, Kim points to the nest cam and excitedly notes that the female seems to be in labor. Sure enough, a short while later, an egg pops out right in front of our eyes. Absolutely incredible. I know I'm watching it on a TV screen, but the fact that it's happening in a nest box that's 50 feet away from me makes it feel very different than if it was a National Geographic documentary. I am officially stoked, and it blows my mind that I'm probably the third most stoked person in this room. This is not the first rodeo for Kim and Rick, but this never gets old for them either. They are truly dedicated to the welfare of these kestrels, and their enthusiasm is infectious. Lady Winnipeg and Mr. Manitoba have so far successfully paired up. They've found a nest, and now they've produced an egg. But their work this breeding season is just getting started. Stay tuned for part two, when if all goes well, there's going to be some brand new baby kestrels. See you then.